With the election right around the corner and our ever-expanding network of podcasts, including our most recent edition, Scylla Consciousness, there's never been a better time to become a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, and enhanced show notes for select shows. Our goal is to make the DSR Network membership accessible to everyone, so for the month of May, enjoy 60% off the normal monthly or annual price for the first month or first year. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code MAYDAY, one word, at checkout. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code MAYDAY. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. On Tuesday night, Donald Trump easily won the Republican presidential primary in Indiana, which isn't that surprising because his lead opponent, Nikki Haley, ended her campaign 2 whole months ago. But a funny thing happened. Non-candidate Nikki Haley still won roughly 22% of the nearly 600,000 votes cast in the GOP primary. This has happened again and again. A sizable block of Republican voters in GOP primaries won't vote for Donald Trump. The fact that this is continuing, even though the nomination battle is effectively settled, suggests that something here is more durable than it seems. But what is it exactly? Today we're joined by David Drucker, senior writer at The Dispatch, who has a new piece about the Indiana results. He's going to help us probe what sort of problem this poses for Trump. Good to have you on, David.
Yeah, good to be here.
Politico called the Indiana results an unexpected warning for Trump, partly because Trump is functionally an incumbent. Now, Indiana is an open primary, but Bill Kristol and Andrew Egger wrote at the Bulwark that they don't think many Dems crossed over to vote for Haley here, meaning they think it was mostly Republican voters. You follow Republican politics closely. Did senior GOP operatives expect Haley to pull more than one-fifth of the GOP primary vote without even being a candidate?
You know, I think Republicans are surprised in one sense because Nikki Haley has not been a candidate for president for 2 months. I mean, that's a long time. She's been largely out of the media, right? So not just not a candidate, but not on television, not giving interviews. The other thing is that Indiana is a red state, and the Republican Party in Indiana is pretty Trumpy, right? There's a Republican National Committee man, John Hammond. He's been around for a long time. He just announced that he's not going to run for another term as the RNC committee man from Indiana. And it's because he just sees that the zeitgeist of the party shifting away from what it was in the 80s, 90s, and the aughts. And so one would expect Donald Trump to do very well in a Republican primary where he has zero competition, not any competition that really matters. On the other hand, Greg, this has been going on for months. I mean, ever since Nikki Haley dropped out of the race, she has, in primary after primary, garnered a healthy protest vote, I would say, right? These are Republicans that want to vote Republican, that think and as Republicans and feel like they're Republicans, and that don't like Joe Biden, not by any stretch, but don't like Trump and really don't want to have to vote for him. The big question is what happens in November, right? And I think if you're the Trump campaign, you have to look at this as a warning sign. And I think in particular, because if we were having this discussion in any other election cycle in the past, what I would be telling you was, well, look, I think a lot of Republicans are unhappy that their first choice or second choice isn't going to be the nominee. And so they're emoting. But I'll bet you come election day in November, they're all going to come home, or the large majority of them. In the presumptive nominee, what they see is somebody that largely shares their values and is the kind of Republican they tend to vote for. And is, you know, somebody they don't really think is a bad guy. But in my travels covering the Republican primary, until it effectively ended when Nikki Haley dropped out, I talked to a lot of voters who were supporting Nikki Haley who simply do not think that Trump is a good guy. They don't share his values, and they really, really wish they had another choice.
I do want to ask you about some of these other primaries. Let's go through some numbers. Haley won 18% of primary voters in Arizona, 16% in Pennsylvania, 13% in Wisconsin, 13% in Georgia. And as you say, this is someone who has long been presumed to be the nominee. And in your piece, you wrote Trump has to, quote, claw back as many of these voters as possible in the general election. I think the big picture here is that this is a real trend. There is clearly a sizable block of Republican voters that is very disaffected with Trump, shows up again and again. I mean, this is a real thing. Can you talk a little more about what your travels have told you on this score?
Yeah, and I do think it's a real thing, and I do think it's a trend. And I do think, again, whereas in the past we would have assumed that the lion's share of them will come home in November the way people always come home to the Democrat or the Republican, that may well happen this time. I just don't think we can assume it. Trump is so well known, so polarizing. It's his third consecutive Republican nomination, third consecutive presidential race, that there are no indecisive voters when it comes to Trump. There may be indecisive voters as to what they do with their vote if they don't like Trump, but they don't have mixed emotions on Trump. You know, it's really interesting. You know, I've just been talking to you about how voters feel about Trump, but there's a story that I wrote for the Dispatch a couple of months ago where I was talking to voters, particularly in South Carolina, but I did this in South Carolina, Iowa, New Hampshire, and I talked to them not just about how they feel about Trump, but about how they feel about the party. You know, as you know, voters often have different sorts of feelings for particular candidates. But if they're partisans, if they're registered Democrats or registered Republicans, it's because they feel at home within the Republican or Democratic Party. It's because they feel like their values are aligned with the respective parties. In a sense, they feel at home there politically. And what I was, you know, learning from a lot of voters who were showing up at Haley rallies was that it wasn't just about Trump or Haley. It was about the fact that they no longer feel at home in the party, that it wasn't just about Trump. It was about the new people he had attracted to the party, the populist right, which is ascendant within the Republican coalition. And these sort of more traditional Reagan era conservatives didn't feel welcome. They don't feel, you know, when Donald Trump famously said, I think it was in January, hey, if you're a Haley, I think it was really directed at Haley donors, but hey, if you're giving to Haley, we don't want you. You're not welcome in MAGA. A lot of Haley voters took that personally. It may be because they don't like Trump to begin with. But what they heard was, you don't want me? Well, guess what? I don't want you. But the part about not feeling wanted transcends Trump, and it's how they feel about the party writ large. And that's, I think, something else that the Trump campaign needs to worry about. We talk a lot about Joe Biden's coalition pressures. This is one particular coalition pressure that Donald Trump has, this suburban traditional conservative that Mike Pence assured and made feel comfortable in 2016. Right now, they're not feeling so assured and they're not feeling so comfortable.
What you just said about those suburban voters is key, because in Indiana, Haley really performed or outperformed among Republican voters in places like Indianapolis and its more well-heeled suburbs. And this is the pattern we've seen in other states where this Haley vote is this type of suburban affluent voter that's alienated by Trump that Biden is going to make a bid for and that Trump absolutely must improve among. Your point about the party really being magnified and alienating to these people seems critical to me. Whatever Trump meant by that remark about Haley voters, it is just a fact that the MAGA movement sort of prides itself on the illusion, I think, that it can win by itself, right? That is central to the kind of MAGA narrative, the idea that Trump is dominant and all-powerful. We don't need people who are weak. We don't need people who waver. We can do this ourselves. We are a majority. And of course, they're not a majority, right? I mean, aren't these the voters, these affluent suburban voters, in primary after primary that pull the lever for Haley? Those are the ones that Biden's going to make the bid for, right?
I've talked to the Biden campaign about this, and I know that they've been test marketing different messages and different appeals to what I've loosely been calling Haley Republicans. So I know that this is top of mind for the Biden campaign, and it's a way that they see to cut into Trump's coalition, especially at a time where at least early polling shows us that the Hispanic vote is more competitive between the nominees, the presumptive nominees. The battle for Black men, although it will end up lopsided for Biden, may not be as lopsided as 2020 and 2016. And there's also a lot of volatile polling with younger voters, depending on whether they sit on their hands or who they choose to vote for. So this is a real sort of area of opportunity for the Biden campaign, and they recognize that. What I am looking for, Greg, is a real material appeal to this group that goes beyond a discussion about the importance of American democracy and Donald Trump's moral peccadilloes, if you will. I'm not saying that those things are not important, but one of the things that I can tell you about Haley Republicans, we'll keep calling them that, they are not liberal Republicans, if you will. I mean, they are traditional Reagan-era conservatives. They're angry at the new Republican Party for spending too much money, for, in their mind, abandoning this idea that government should at least try to shrink. Maybe it doesn't get there, but at least you care. At least you care about debt. At least you care about projecting American power abroad. Some of these things in the foreign policy realm, I think, are where Joe Biden can make his best case. His defense of Ukraine, getting money to Taiwan, getting money to Israel, and caring about the transatlantic alliance with Europe, NATO. These are areas where it's a lot easier for Biden to make an appeal because it comes naturally to him. And it's something that the Democratic Party has sort of taken on in the Trump era that used to belong more to the Republican Party. On domestic issues, though, I think it would help if we're speaking strictly about these kind of voters. And obviously the president has a party of his own and constituencies within his coalition of his own. But if he's looking for these voters, something on the domestic side, and I'm not sure what it needs to be or should be, but that's who these voters are. They don't want to vote for Trump. And some of them have told me, oh, I might end up voting for Trump. I just may have no other choice. I'm so upset about it. And so in my reporting, what I would say is appeals to American democracy are not unimportant, and they may matter a great deal. But these voters are looking for something they can hang their hat on in the more traditional policy sense. And I'll be interested to see if the president and his team, throw them a bone in that regard.
Well, I think you're going to see something on immigration coming, and I think maybe the Biden people will really make a strong pitch to those voters that they agreed to a Republican border plan that Republicans sank because Trump told them to. And so that will be one area where they'll try to litigate what you're talking about. I do want to return to something you said earlier about this idea of people returning home to the Republican Party. One thing that interests me about what we're seeing is that a lot of these Republican voters don't seem like their partisan loyalties are being triggered by Trump's legal travails, right? One of the pieces of conventional wisdom out there has been that as prosecutions of Trump proceed, GOP voters grow more committed to him out of anger at his supposed victimization. And that's obviously true of a certain type of hardcore MAGA voter. But again and again, with this sliver of Republicans not returning to Trump and going for Haley, it's telling that they're not doing that even as these trials are proceeding. They're supposed to be driving Republican voters home, but these voters aren't being driven home by that. What do you think about that?
Well, look, these are the voters, though, that I think never wanted to vote for Trump in this primary to begin with. I mean, that's, I think, what you're seeing, right? So in other words, it's true, and I think we know this now, that all of the indictments helped Trump win the Republican primary. And I used to say during the primary that Trump was better off spending every day in court rather than any day in Iowa, New Hampshire, or South Carolina. Every day in the courtroom was a better campaign event for him and a better day just from the standpoint of winning the nomination. But look, in winning the nomination, even in some of those early states, right? I mean, his numbers for, if we look at his numbers from the standpoint of being an incumbent, they weren't necessarily all that impressive. So what you have here is a group of voters that wouldn't have voted for him before he was the presumptive nominee and kept holding out hope that Haley would somehow find a way to avoid reality, right? They wanted her to continue after New Hampshire, after South Carolina, because they didn't want to be stuck with Trump. And given the chance to register a protest vote, knowing that it's not going to do them any good, they're doing it. The question, though, is once you get to November and it's time to vote for president again, and, you know, many Americans feel like it's their civic duty to vote for president. That's why presidential elections usually bring in more votes than, you know, midterm elections, for instance. What are they going to do? And I just don't think we know, right? So the warning sign for Donald Trump is we can't necessarily say they're going to come home. On the other hand, they might. They might say, it's so regrettable that I'm stuck with this guy and all the criminal indictments, etc. But what am I going to do? And all of the polling that we see so far shows us that it's not necessarily hurting Trump that he has this legal cloud hanging over him. I mean, in one sense, we could say that if Donald Trump was a different person who didn't have all of these indictments, maybe he'd be ahead by more. Maybe it would be a much more, you know, decisive lead right about now, given people's feelings about Biden, at least within the data that we're looking at. So maybe we could say it is hurting him because that's why the race is so competitive. But, you know, it's hard to say because Trump's always hanging by a thread. In 2016, he wins, what, because of 40,000 votes spread across three states? He's always hanging by a thread, whether he wins or he loses.
Well, look, when it comes to getting those voters, as we mentioned earlier, there's a major push underway to get some of them to vote for the Democrat in the general election. A group of never-Trumpers, including pollster Sarah Longwell, is spending tens of millions of dollars to get these voters. Biden campaign heavily targeting them. I've got to think that people like Jeff Duncan, the former lieutenant governor of Georgia who resisted Trump in 2020 and now has endorsed Biden, will be all over the airwaves if Democrats have their way. Paul Ryan just came out. He's not going to vote for Trump. I guess Rusty Bowers, right, out in Arizona. If I were the Biden campaign and I thought these voters were gettable, I'd be going up on the air with a whole bunch of Republicans who resisted Trump, resisted his potentially criminal schemes to overturn the election and so forth. I do think that those types of voices, if there's a critical mass of them, could start to really appeal to some of these people. Is there going to be a critical mass of them? Where do you see all that going?
Well, I think we have to see what a lot of these different people do. I mean, you know, Nikki Haley is sort of big mystery number one. What does she do? Does she end up saying that, you know, does she end up telling everyone that she can't support Trump or that she will? And if she can't support Trump and says so publicly, that could carry a lot of weight with these voters. It sort of depends. Endorsements aren't necessarily what they used to be, and yet endorsements or unendorsements occasionally can prove very valuable. I think there's just a lot we don't know yet. I suspect, though, that the Biden campaign and groups that are helping the Biden campaign are going to, you know, find every Republican they can that opposes Trump and try and use that to convince, to create a permission structure for other Republicans who don't want to vote for Trump or wish they didn't have to vote for Trump. Sarah Longwell's group in 2020 very effectively ran ads in key battleground states focused on, you know, media markets where this mattered, where they had videos of just regular people saying, I'm a normal Republican, I've been voting Republican my whole life, but I can't do it this year. I think we're going to see more messaging like that. It'll be interesting to see how well it works. You know, one thing that's different this year is Joe Biden is a known quantity as president. And you know this, Greg, like when before you have a record as president, when voters want to make a change or when voters don't like, you know, the opposition, let's say, they can imagine in the candidate that they want to vote for everything about him or her they hope to be true. Oh, he's a centrist. Oh, she's dependable on this issue, and things like that. Once you have a record, people are judging you on your record and not just what they hope your record will be or what they've convinced themselves your record will be. I'll never forget just a quick real little story. In 2008, I was leaving the Democratic convention in Denver, and a woman somehow figured out that I was a reporter. We're at the airport, Denver International. And she's like, what do you think about Barack Obama? And I said, you know, I think he's a liberal Democrat, but, you know, seems qualified to be president. She's like, I hope he's not a socialist, because I'm going to vote for him. And I just really hope he's not a socialist. And it was, she was walking herself through this journey of wanting to vote for him and assuring herself and hoping I could help assure her that he wasn't a socialist. Look, he wasn't a socialist. He never turned out to be a socialist. But my point is, this is what voters do. He didn't have a record. So she was imagining him to be what she needed him to be. Biden doesn't have that going for him this time. Of course, neither does Trump. So it's this really weird incumbent versus incumbent president election that has not happened since the 1800s.
Okay, tell me this. Is George W. Bush going to say anything?
I doubt it, but I don't know. But he tends not to. But I mean, look, I think we could assume by now that he's not voting for Trump. But it has generally been his way to not speak up. But I wonder if he's still a sort of lingering polarizing figure, that he's better off not speaking up. I think current Republican figures might be more effective. And I will just go back to Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller's group in 2020. They use just regular voters in home recorded videos. I thought that was the most effective thing I'd ever seen in terms of trying to sway votes in an unusual way, because it wasn't an elitist so-called. It wasn't an elected official with, you know, ulterior motives. It was just an everyday person. And the everyday voters that are on the Republican side of the aisle that are having this debate with themselves, Trump or Biden, I think it's much more effective for them to hear from other people like them to create a permission structure. With the caveat, the exception to my rule here, is I do think it's very significant what Nikki Haley decides to say about what she's going to do when she goes into the voting booth in November.
That is going to be enormously interesting and potentially very influential. Well, David Drucker, thanks so much for sharing all your insights with us today.
Anytime, Greg. Thank you.
Everyone, we have some great new content for you up at TNR.com. Alex Shepard explaining how President Biden thought he could influence Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but in fact, Biden is getting played instead. And Matt Ford looking at how two little-noticed FEC decisions last week just made our money in politics problem much worse. We'll see you all tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.